Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Mem Hey. We're holding right at the bottom of Kuf Mem Dalet Amud Beis, and we were talking about this very important yesod of Shmuel, which is that a mashke that is Bala Ochlin has a din of Ochlin and does not have a din of mashke. So today, Ravina has a kasha on Shmuel from the Mishnah, in which the Mishnah says, and when we were talking about this Mishnah yesterday, when we were talking about the question of whether the milk would be considered to be a tame or not, and we're talking about a zov, how about if it's not a zov? A zov can be metame behesed, but how about if we're talking about a tame mace, right? So over there, if a tame mace would squeeze, let's say, zeitim v'anavim, and the fruit that he is squeezing was measured to be precisely the size of a kibetza. Okay? So now, if it's a kibetza, it can be metame ochlin. But if it's not a kibetza, it cannot be metame ochlin umashke. So now, you start to squeeze it. But the moment that you get out the first little bit from it, it's already not the size of a kibetza, right? Because you had measured it was precisely a kibetza. So then the din would be that whatever comes out from it, the instant that it came out, there's less than a kibetza of eichlin to be metamiyat, and therefore it's tahar, which implies that if it would be yoter mikibetza, it would be tamei, right? Now, does it say over here that it matters whether you're squeezing this juice into a kedera or into a ka'ara, the way according to Shmuel it would have to matter? No, it doesn't say a word, which is mashma, that it makes no difference. Now, according to you, Shmuel, if you're telling that mashka abala ochel is considered to be an ochel, explain to me how it is that the so-called food looks like a liquid, but nobody who's got a halachic mind is going to be fooled by something stupid like that. Who cares if it looks like a liquid, feels like a liquid, tastes like a liquid? What are you, living in the Matrix or something? The reality is that you are looking at a piece of food. That's what Shmuel says. Don't be fooled. Now, according to you, that would mean that it would need heksher. Okay, where's the heksher? So then, b'may eat kasher. Apparently, the Mishnah considers it to be that still an actual mashke. And then Ravina, he answers that, well, you know what? I mean, the Mishnah's not that mock, but maybe the Mishnah's talking about besochet letocha ka'ara. Fine. Omer Rav Yirmiyah, the truth is, the issue that Shmuel has raised, which is whether mashke that's bolotoch ochlin is considered to be ochlin or mashke, is a machlokes tanoim kitanoi. Because if you take a look at the Mishnah in Maisris, and this should get Moshe should wake up. We're talking about a Mishnah in Maisris. That should be enough to give you a jolt of adrenaline. Okay, there we go. So it says over there that if you are a baker, and you are baking challahs, and you want these challahs to look all shiny on top, like the expensive challahs look like, then what you do is you use something to give them a shine, right? So he takes these grapes, and he squeezes them along the challah. And then as the challah bakes in the oven and it dries, it's left with this very, very thin, molecular thin liquidy that turns into a shiny surface. And that, you should know, lo huchshar. Just because you squeeze the grape in that way on your challah doesn't mean that you should think that the grape is considered to be mukshar lekabel tumah because it came into contact with grape juice. It did not come into contact. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, what do you mean? There was liquid on it. Of course it came into contact. Ah, so what must be the machlokas? Bango! It's exactly the machlokas about what Shmuel said. Apparently, the Tanakama holds that Mar Savar Mashkel Balatocha Ochal Ochalu. That since when you're squeezing out this juice, it's going onto the challah and it's going to become part of the challah, it doesn't have a din of a mashke, and because of that, it cannot be Machshel LeKabel Tumah. Whereas Mar Savar Rabbi Yehuda says, why isn't it Ochel? It tastes like like grape juice. It looks like grape juice. And it works like grape juice. So why isn't it grape juice? So why was that not machshir? So you see that this is good for the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Tanakama. Is Shmuel right or not? Says Rav Papa, not necessarily. I can give you a completely different explanation of the machlokas that has no bearing on the dinim of Shmuel. It could be nobody agrees with Shmuel. maybe everybody would agree that a mashkabal ochel is not an ochel, okay? But that would mean that the thing that you're using over here ought to be a mashka, because it's not an ochel just because you put it onto your challahs. But there's another question over here. This mashka, the moment that I'm squeezing it, my intent is for it to be almost instantly evaporated in the tanur, right? So is that considered to be a mashka? It's something that I am squeezing out in order for it to go poof. Okay, so then that's le'ibud. So is a mashka that I'm only extracting for the purpose of ibud, is that a mashka? That's a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda says, why not? As long as it exists, it's a mashka. The Chachamim say, in order to be a mashka, it has to be something that is meant to have a lifetime. And this thing that is meant to be mu'ubad in the heat is not considered to be a mashka at all. But that doesn't, and I know you're going to say, well, where do you get a machlokas like that from? I'll show you that there's a machlokas like that, okay? I'll prove it to you. There is such a machlokas because we plucked it to Hanitanoi. The Tanya, we have a brighter that says, somebody who has hands that he did not wash. So these are Stam Yadayim that would be Metame for Truma and Sofa. Okay. So now what he does is he's Mifatseya. Mifatseya actually means to punch it up, to bruise it. I think they actually call it in English, I think they call it bruising as a process. So you went ahead and you bruised up your olives, and you did this with Yadayim Misoavot. So then, since as you bruise it, a little bit of oil comes out of it, so then the Rukshir Lekabel Tuma, and that would mean that you would be doing it for the normal purpose, which is you want to give it a little bit of flavor, right? So when the olive is hard, it barely tastes like it's edible. So because of that, he's happy to get a little flavor in it by bruising it, and he's happy for what a little bit of oil on it also makes it taste much more olivey. So that's all part of what he would want. So because of that, for sure, that's going to be makshir. But suppose you're only bruising them in order to soften them so that they're salting them, the salt will stick to them. Because olives, when they're hard, they might as well be a marble. You're not going to be able to salt a marble. You're not going to be able to salt an olive. So therefore, you're mefatseya them in order to soften them for salting. If that was the point, so then they are not mukhshir lekabel tuma because you have no interest in the shemen. And therefore, it's not considered to be a makshir. How about if you bruise them in order to see whether they are ready yet for picking to be squeezed? Then they're also, you need to have the oil over there because you need to see how easy it is to get the oil out. I mean, that's what you're checking for, right? But since, what? Since it's only going to be wasted, it's a test, right? So you're squeezing it, and what are you going to do with the oil afterwards? Nothing. You wipe it off with a napkin. I mean, you have no interest in the oil. It's a test. So what does that mean? That because it was only a test, lo hukshar. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, even though it's only a test, it would still be mukshar, which seems to be exactly the machlokas. I told you I could prove to you that there's a machlokas about this issue. Is mashka that's omed li'ibud, is that considered to be a mashka or not? So apparently Rabbi Yehuda holds, yes, it's considered to be mashka and it's makshir. And the Tanakhama holds, no, since it's anyway going le'ibud, it's not considered to be a makshir. Why not learn that machlokas tanoim is the machlokas tanoim over here in the Mishnah? And therefore, it has nothing to do with the question of mashka bala ochal. So please take it off the menu over here. Omer Rav Yehuda b'Rav of Yeshua, that doesn't make any sense, Rav Papa. That can't be the basis of the machlokas over here. Because I say, that Hanitanoi b'mashka ha'omed le'ibud pligi. Yes, the question, you're 100% right. There is a machlokas about ibud. But what does that have to do with the question of rubbing grapes to get a nice finish on your challah? Why is that called ibud? I understand what ibud? Ibud means it's useless. Over here, that is what its use is. I want to use this liquid in order to provide a shine to a challah. How in the world can you compare that to a case where the oil is not going to be used at all, where you just need to see whether the oil will emerge? You don't want the oil over here. You want the grape juice. So you're saying, I only want the grape juice until it's burned in the furnace. So what? That's its purpose. Okay. So therefore, the machlokas over here is a completely different issue. The machlokas of the Tanaim over here, oh, I agree with you. that it has nothing to do with the question of whether Ochel Abola, Mashkin Abola Ochel is considered to be Mashkin. And that I agree with you, but I don't think it has anything to do with the Machlokas of Iba, okay? The question that they're arguing over here is, what is the din of a shine? That's the question. Is a shine, is that considered to be a mashka omid letzakzecho? It's meant to be a shining thing. Or is that considered to be a mashke or not? Because even if it does have a din of mashke, if its entire purpose is to become basically a solid, which is the shine, so then maybe it's no longer considered to be a mashke. It's considered to be a food, not because of the fact that it mixed with the challah, but because it's being used as a solid shiner. Or do we say shine is just another way that a liquid retains its functional liquidity even when it's dry? Because that's the point. In other words, a wax, a good wax, is going to give your floor the look of a wet floor if it's a really good wax. It's very shiny. So that's essentially what you're doing over here. But that would mean that you are retaining its liquidity, so to speak, even though now it's become a shining thing. Omer of Reb Zeron Reb Chiya Barashi Omer Rav. Now, this is interesting because we're about to say essentially what Shmuel said, except that we're not quoting it in the name of Shmuel. All of a sudden, we're quoting it in the name of Rav. So it says Rabbi Zera that Reb Chiya Barashi quoted Rav as saying that you're allowed to squeeze grapes directly into a pot and not into a bowl. And he adds this additional point, that if you squeeze a fish in order to get the brine of the fish out of the fish, that you could do even into a bowl. Why? Because we don't look at fish brine as a liquid. It is, and especially in those days, it is a food, and that's how it was consumed. Now, Rav Dimi was setting this over. Yossi Rav Dimi, v'komala l'shmaitze. By the way, the only contemporary thing that I can think of that borders on this type of discussion from a totally different point of view, obviously, but taking a liquid and saying it's not a liquid as a food is, I'm sure you have all heard, whether from nutritionists or pediatrician, milk is not a liquid. It's a food, right? Okay. So it's the same kind of issue. So like what attributes do we give it within a particular set of things? If that set of things is nutrition and so on. All right. So anyway, Rav Dimi, when he heard that, and he repeated it that in the name of Rav, and Abaya was there, and Abaya said to Rav Dimi, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Because you learned this in the name of Rav, and because of that, there's no problems. We have been struggling with this for a while because we were taught that it was in the name of Shmuel. And this business about the fish does not work out according to Shmuel. Because Miyama Shmuel Douglas Tiro Filotokara, you're telling me that according to Shmuel, he would have said that you can squeeze a fish even into a bowl because it's by definition considered to be a food? But that's not true, because Itmar, we learned that there's a machlokis Rav and Shmuel about this, and this has to do with pickle juice. Now, the question is, pickle juice. Does anybody want to drink pickle juice? Well, I don't know. Rich, you want to weigh in on that? So the question is like this. You've got pickles, okay? So there's two reasons to squeeze a pickle. One reason is because it's got too much liquid in it, you know, and you want to put it on your salami sandwich, and so you want it to be much more of a dried out pickle. So then you're just trying to get rid of the juice in order to have a more usable pickle. But what if you want to squeeze the pickle because you want a drink of pickle juice? So if you have kvashim, so you've got these pickled, obviously doesn't only have to be a what we call a pickle, which is a cucumber, but some whatever vegetable you pickled. And Rav says, if you're squeezing them out in order to make them more suitable for your salami sandwich, then it's mutter, because then you have absolutely no interest in the vinegar that was in it or in the salt water, whatever. So then it's mutter. But if you want to get the juice, then it's potter. You're not going to be chayev because, now here's an interesting question. Why? Well, Rashi says, because the din of schita is only where a liquid was initially part of the natural vegetable, but not where you filled it up because you were pickling it within a bottle of vinegar or salt water, right? So then squeezing out that liquid is not taking something out of the pickle, for heaven's sakes. The pickle never grew with this stuff in it. That's how Rashi understands it. The question is, of course, from all many sugyas that we had before, one very recently, which is the good old sponge. Why did we say that there's a problem of sponging up the wine that was falling out of the barrel because you're going to squeeze the sponge out with the wine, even if you would squeeze the sponge with the wine? The way that Rashi is learning, sponges with wine, you would never be chayav on because the sponge doesn't grow with the wine. Big question. For a number of other sugyas as well, if we were only limited to sponges, we could say a brilliant answer, which as Rashi understands the sponge to be a living sea creature, then the problem with sponges is that the entire modality of their life form is to bring salt water into the sponge. And it's always coming from the outside because that's exactly where they live. They're separate cells that are just together getting all of that nice pickle juice inside of them. So maybe squeezing a sponge could be, in fact, similar to the norm of the sponge. Okay, but anyway, obviously the issue is going to have to be addressed on a broader level. So anyway, it says over there, if you're talking about boiled veggies, and the boiled veggies are full of juice, so then it doesn't matter whether you want it in order to make the vegetable more edible, or whether you want it for the juice, it would be exactly the same thing, because what Rav is saying is that since people don't usually look for that liquid, so we see that as just, it's like a food. It's a different way of eating that food. So therefore, that would be mutter. But Shmuel says it's not mutter. And echad kvashim echad shlakod is only if you'd want it for the gufam. But limei mehem, the rabbanan answered it. It would be potter aval osir. Now, the din about the fish that you mentioned before is exactly the same, should be exactly the same, as the din about the veggie stew, right? So why does Shmuel say you're allowed to squeeze a fish because it's considered to be eichlin, but you're not allowed to squeeze a wet tomato that you boiled up, which also should be considered to be an eichlin? And that was driving us crazy because Shmuel was contradicting himself. And the way you, Rav Dimi, you were saying it, it's really unbelievable. It worked out perfectly because it's Dafka Rav. And over here, Rav was arguing on Shmuel, which means that everything works out marvelously. Rav Dimi said to him, listen here, buddy. It's not just a matter of convenience that it's Rav. I swear to God, I saw this with my own eyes. Einai ra'u v'lo zar. I saw this myself. And I heard it directly from Rabbi Yirmiyah. Okay, we're not talking about anecdotes over here. I heard it from Rabbi Yirmiyah. I can trace back where this comes from. Rabbi Yirmiyah heard it from Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira heard it from Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi. Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi himself heard it from Rav. We could trace this back, and we know exactly where it came from. It was, in fact, Rav. It wasn't Shmuel's. Don't tell me, oh, well, it works out really nice. No, that works out. It's that's the fact, darn it. Gufa, getting into that machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, about whether if I squeeze the pickles, whether that's considered to be legufan. So Rav says, legufan mutter lemeimeh potter avalaser, but if you squeeze out the leshlakot, according to Rav, either way it's mutter, because it's always considered to be a food, where Shmuel says, no, echetzav echetzel legufan mutter, and lemeimeh it's potter avalaser. That was just the tip of an iceberg, because there's really a different shita. That's the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. He takes it to an extreme. Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't care whether we're talking about kvashim. I don't care whether we're talking about shlakot. It's all very nice to say that if you want to prepare something, it is just not a mefarik at all. And therefore, it's mutter l'chatchila. But I can tell you one thing. If you take out the water because you want the water, so let me tell you something. It's considered to be a d'oraisa because it's considered to be a mashkin. And there's no such thing as what Rashi was saying. It's not considered to be mefarik if it didn't come from their lechatchila. You would actually be chayav achatas. So now we have three shitas, Rav, Shmuel, and Rabbi Yochanan, who disagree about the shlakot, right? Rabbi Yochanan is disagreeing even about the kvashim. Asks the Gemara, can I finish or you prefer we finish now? We have just another little piece really to get this done. Okay, so the question over here is, what are you going to do with the following where it says, so chatin kvashim b'shabbat v'tzorach shabbat, you can squeeze pickles on Shabbos if you're going to use it on Shabbos, but you can't squeeze pickles to get it ready for Malava Malka, because that's considered to be hachana from Shabbos l'chol, right? And if you're going to be squeezing olives or you're going to be squeezing grapes, you're not allowed to squeeze them at all. And if you did squeeze them, you would be chayav achatas. Does not say one word over here whether the purpose of these squeezing the pickles is in order to get the juice or it's in order to be legufan. And all it says is it's okay to do it on Shabbos. As long as you don't do it for Mitzray Shabbos, it's a totally different issue, which is Hachonim Shabbos Lechol. This makes no sense according to anybody, because nobody held that you're allowed to squeeze it for the pickle juice. There wasn't one shita that said that, okay? So it's a kash on Rav, it's a kash on Shmuel, it's like the ultimate kash on Rabbi Yochanan, it would be a diraisa, and you're saying it's mutar lechatchila. So obviously everybody's going to have to do a little bit of tuning, sometimes not even fine-tuning, but some pretty big tuning of this braita to make it fit their din. So Rav is betar tzataime, Shmuel is betar tzataime, Rabbi Yochanan is betar tzataime, and you can figure this out yourself, okay? Rav is betar tzataime by reading into the braita as follows. You're allowed to squeeze pickles for Shabbos. Please insert the following, however, caveat. And if you would be talking about boiled veggies, then it would be mutter even if it was l'gufam. But when it comes to zeitim va'anavim, you're not allowed to be sochet, and if you did, you'd be chayev chatas. Okay, fine. Shmuel adjusts it a little bit differently, l'taime. He says the same thing. Okay, you're allowed to be sochet kvashim on Shabbos for Shabbos, and that's true about boiled veggies too, because that was his shita, but only if it was legufam, both legabe boiled veggies and that's Shmuel shita and legabe pickles. So he would have to insert this caveat. Bamed var mamurim legufam on both of these. Avalim mehem potter avalaser, but, and we all agree, zeitim v'anavim, getting back to the bright, lo yischot. And it's there that it was saying im sachat chayev chatas. Rabbi Yochanan says, I like the part about that chayev chatas. It fits in really, really good according to me, and I don't have to limit it to the zeitim v'anavim. So according to me, I make a little different adjustment. Sochat in kvashu l'tzorach Shabbos avalo l'mitzorach Shabbos. And I agree that this is a problem, whether it's pickles or whether it's boiled veggies. Now, here's how I adjust it, okay? It's only going to be mutter legufam to do on Shabbos. But if you squeeze it for the juice, lo yischot ve'im sachat. Now, here's how to read that last piece, zeisim v'anavim, im sachat. It's the equivalent of being the squeezing of zeisim v'anavim, and therefore, even for squeezing a pickle, you would be chayev achatas. I really had wanted to get up to the Mishnah. And nobody's giving me any thumbs up or anything. Nobody's giving me any encouragement. I'm getting a little bit of encouragement. Little bit. I don't know. La's not being very encouraging. Nor did I even manage to bring out Naftali so we'd get another vote. Nothing. Well, Steven's sitting there like it doesn't concern him. Bruzy's giving me something. How about Nachi? Okay. We've got two thumbs up from Avi. I think that definitely pushes it over the edge, don't you? So we can go ahead a little bit. So Omer of Chia Marashi, Omer Rav, listen, you got to know that you would only be chayav achatas on drisa zeisim v'anovim bilvat. V'chein tani devei Menashe, devar Torah, forget about this business, Rabbi Yochanan. You can never be chayav midiraisa except on something which the Torah defined as the norm. And it's got to be kedarko. No malacha dan shelo kedarko is considered to be a malacha. And squeezing things other than this, it, which is the norm of how you squeeze peras, you are chayev and only that. And the zeitim, I lost my place here, and the drisat zeitim and the anavim bilvat. And once we're on it, by the way, says the Brisa, there's another halakha that was given over in this Brisa, that an aid mipi aid is not kosher for anything except for aidus of an isha. So if a woman's husband disappeared overseas and she's got a witness who quotes another witness as saying that we know that he died in that boat sinking or whatever, you're allowed to be semich on that. Remember, that was a whole big sugya. It was a special takana. You're allowed to be semich on that because we assume that because of the disastrous consequences of remarriage, when you didn't know for a fact that that was what happened, the woman would be hiring detective agencies and she would only remarry if she was satisfied that this happened. And because of that, the reality is that the Chachomim utilized their kayak of annulling a marriage in order to be matir this. Okay. Ibailahu, would you be allowed to hearsay witness to rely on an aid mipi aid to prove that Barnea did not put a mum into that bechor before he shechted it, before he presented it to the mumcha, because we don't trust Kohanim about that kind of stuff, and they're too likely to want that mum for us to believe them when they say, no, it happened to trip, and it wasn't anything to do with me. So would an aid mipi aid be good enough? Rav Ami says, no, you cannot. You need real testimony. Rav Azi says it's mutter. Omele Rav Ami Levrasi, what do you mean it's mutter? Didn't we just have a braita that we quoted from the B'nai Menashe that ein eid mipi eid kosher ela le'edis isha bilvad? I mean, that's particularly what it's coming to address. Do not think that because the din of edis of a bechor is only drabon and that therefore it's okay to use it for... What do you come off saying something like that? Ah, because you're not understanding what the braita says. It doesn't mean ein eid mipi eid kosher ela le'edis isha to be mater and isha whose husband disappeared. It meant la'edus isha for the type of testimony that a woman can give. That's the point. So the way to read it is le'educha isha kisheirala bilvad. Only something that a woman is also believed on, which includes bechor, would be included in the heter of eid mipi eid. And because of that, Rav Yemar actually was machshir eid mipi eid lebechor. And boy, oh boy, did Mar Yemar make fun of him. From then on, he used to call him, well, my friend Yemar, the guy who goes around being Mater Bechoras, the reform Yemar, right? But in the end, we actually paskin like that. Ve'ilchata eid mipi eid is actually kosher lebechor. Oh, gosh. Just the honeycombs, man. Can we just go ahead and honeycomb it? Okay. So honeycomb, won't you? Chalos devash. Well, what about honeycombs? So kiyosu Rav Oshaya min Hardos. We have a machlokas where Belozer says if the honeycomb is oozing and you had started it before Shabbos by cutting it up, so he says it's mutter. And the Chachamim say no, we're still worried about it. Now when Rav Oshaya came from Narada, he brought along a little brisa in his pocket, which said that zeitim va'anavim that were chopped up from Erev Shabbos, and you put them in a bowl, and now they're leaking liquid on Shabbos. So we have the same machlokas. Tanna Kamma says they're aser. Rabbi Elazar says they're mutter, except that over here he adds the words, and Rabbi Shimon agrees. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon both agree that it's mutter. Says Rabbi Elazar, come on, man. What do you mean he brought a little brice in his pocket like he's got a big chiddush? There ain't no chiddush over here. What, all of this just to add the words Rabbi Shimon to Rabbi Elazar? That's the whole point? Gavri yitera atalashmina. What, I got to know everybody who holds this? I'm like, are you kidding? This is a massive chiddush. Tuva kamash. Well, he's teaching us amazing things, because if you only would have had the Mishnah that talks about honeycombs, I would have said it's dafka, a honeycomb, because over there, the honey is considered to be in the same exact status it was in the comb when it comes out of the comb. Mikora uchla ubesof uchla. Now, this, by the way, is a very imprecise formulation, because honey is not ochlin. Honey is mashkin. It's actually one of the Shiva mashkin. But what it means is it is what it was, and no change is made. And whenever no change is made, there is no mefarik. There's no problem of disha. Therefore, since it was initially a liquid, and in the end it's a liquid, therefore I understand there's nothing to be gozer. Mashenkin over here, the juice originally was an olive or a grape, and now it's a mashka. So maybe even Rebbe Lazar is made of that. It's also kamashmalan. Once it was crushed, even in that case, Rebbe Lazar is matir, since it tends to ooze out by itself, and it's not the norm to be squeezing it. From our trusty Kapitan. I mean, how do we begin a Halakha Mishnah? Kol Shabbat b'chamin me'erev Shabbat, shurino to b'chamin b'Shabbat. So anything that had been cooked up before Shabbos, the truth is there's really two very different aspects to this Mishnah, because Rashi before brought the same Mishnah and understood it to mean anything that had been salted, that had been put into chamin. But over here, the sugya is talking about meats, as we're going to see. So something that had been cooked up before Shabbos. Now it's fully cooked. You're allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos. Now, you're always going to ask, I mean, what type of thing would you want to soak? It doesn't help its taste in any way. But kosholopa b'chamin b'erev Shabbat, anything that you hadn't actually cooked in water, you would be allowed, Rashi says, for instance, like those hard salamis and things like that, or salted meat, that you can wash off with water on Shabbos. And it's a question whether this is Kli Rishon or Kli Sheni. Most about are even Kli Rishon. Chutz min hamaliach hayashan, v'kulyas ha'ispani, shadachan zohi gmar melachtan. The only thing that we would consider just the simple washing off itself to be a way of cooking would be on the type of fish that you've cooked for, salted to last indefinitely. So like this is a year old already. Reculius Hispanin, which is Spanish tunina, Rashi says elsewhere, a type of tuna. Some suggest that tuna and mackerel are really related, and therefore maybe it's what we call Spanish mackerel, which is very popular as a salted fish. But in any event, that is the only way that you're going to be able to eat that thing is by actually washing it off, because it's put into a tremendous amount of salt. And therefore, that would be the preparation, and because of that, it would be usur. Kegon mai, why in the world, asks the Gemara, would anybody want to put something that was already fully cooked to soak it into water? Omrev safa kegon tarnegolta de Reb Abba. It's like Reb Abba's chicken. I mean, what he used to do is he had some stomach problems. So he used to cook it, and then he would leave it sitting in hot water for like a long time until it totally dissolved in the water. And then he would actually have chicken mush. And he found that this was beneficial to his digestion. So you're allowed to put it into water, you know, if you like that kind of thing. The Omer of Safra, Zimda Chode Kloit Lasam. I got to tell you, I once went to Eretz Yisrael and I had some of that stuff. I'm telling you, I was gagging. I was about to vomit all over the table. And if it wouldn't have been that Reb Abba brought out quickly some really high-quality wine, and this was three-year-old wine, Bartolata Tarfi, I wouldn't have been able to control myself. I would have thrown up all over the place. Reb Yochanan, yeah, well, you think that the Eretz Yisrael stuffed food is bad. Reb Yochanan, if you just mentioned that marvelous Bovel Kutach dip, he would start to gag. Omer of Yosef, well, these guys think that we don't know how to eat in Bovel. I can tell you that I can start gagging when you just mentioned the town of Golot to Reb Abba, okay? Their food is just as crummy as ours. Viod, Omer of Gaza, let me tell you something. One time I went to Eretz Yisrael from here in Bovel, and I made them some delicious kutach habavli. You know, these guys probably never had real kutach habavli. They had this phony commercial stuff that says on it kutach habavli, and you try to eat it, and it's, what? This is not even edible? I made them some of the real stuff, man. And I had a line going around the corner. Let me tell you. V'sha'ilu mine ko briche ma'arova. Anybody that had any kind of problems with digestion, they were sitting there begging me for some. So don't give me that stuff. Okay, so then the Mishnah says, if it hadn't actually been taken care of before Shabbos to be boiled, then you're not allowed to wash it off with the hot water. And what if you would? Omer of Yosef, if you did, you'd be chayav achatas. Omer mabarei de Ravina fanami tanina. Look, it says that in the Mishnah, doesn't it? Because it says, Chutz mimaliach yashan v'kulias ha'ispanin shadachatan zohi gmar melachtan. So what does gmar melachtan mean? I mean, gmar melachtan means that. It means that that's the real cooking. So shmamina, that the Mishnah is telling you that. I don't even know what his suffix was. Yotiv repriya barava v'rabasi kamid reb Yochanan. And as we saw many times, the Talmidim, when Rabbi Yochanan would sort of snooze off a little bit, they would keep talking between themselves. And it always turns out that Rabbi Yochanan was sort of listening in his sleep, and when he finally couldn't take it anymore, he would get up and he would object to all of the nonsense that they were talking about. So this is one of those times. So there's Rabbi Yochanan catching himself a little bit of a nap. And in front of him are sitting Rabbi Chiya bar Ava and Rabbi Asi. So Rabbi Yochanan is sitting, and he's been amnim. So Rabbi Chiya bar Ava says to Rabbi Asi, how come those empire chickens taste so much better than the Israeli chickens? So he said to him, yeah, that's a chutzpah. You come out with me to the midbar around Gaza, and I'll show you what a fat chicken is, man. Verech shmani mahin. All right. And how come in Bavel, the yontavs are so great? I mean, the food is just amazing. Everybody's gathered in shul. They're really happy. Eretz Yisrael, yontav is nice, but it's not the same thing. Oh, that? That's because these guys don't have any happiness in their life except yontav. You know, the whole year they go around miserable. They're aniyim. I mean, what do you expect from them? So they save up whatever possible happiness they could have. And that's why the yontav is particularly happy, because they don't know what happiness is. All right. And how come, let me ask you something else. I mean, you see these rabbis, you know, in Bavel, they're dressed to kill. I mean, these guys look really, really good. Boss suits, you know, and so on. I mean, like, how come over here everybody looks like they're so slobbish? Oh, that's because b'nei she'enam b'nei Torah. Look, they don't have anything else to show, right? So what are you going to do? You can't honor them for their Torah because they don't have anything to say. So they have to make themselves choshev somehow. So they dress it, and you go boss suit, and they figure that way everybody will be mechabed them, and people fall for it. That's the only reason they look good. Anyway, so one other thing. Why is it that Ovdei Kochavim are mezuamim? Why do they smell? Why are they like at such a low level physically? That's because they don't know how to eat properly. They eat katzim v'remashim. And obviously, your diet affects your sweat and so on. And because of that, they're mezuamim. At this point, Rabbi Yochanan finally couldn't take it anymore. And he wakes up, Itar ben Rabbi Yochanan. And he says, okay, kids, you know, when you get some brains, you know how to think, then you can talk to each other, all right? Until then, lokach amarti lechem, how many times have I told you? Emor lechokhma achotiyat. You have to be able to say intelligent things, that chokhmah is as clear to you as your sister, okay? You know you're not allowed to sleep with your sister? Then you got to know exactly what you're talking about on that same level. No kashas, no problems. Im barur lecha hadavar ke'achotcha she'asura lecha. So then if somebody asks you something, say it. And if not, keep your mouth shut. And you guys don't know what you're talking about. So they said, okay, so Rebbe, maybe you'll tell us at least a few of these questions of very important things that we were talking about. That's because those birds, they never went into Golas. And whenever you're in your place, you just keep developing and growing. We see this from Moav. What does it say? Sha'anan Moav minu urav v'shaket u'al shmarav u'bagola lohalach. Because Moab has been so calm, you take a look at Americans. They never get to do anything that is a problem. Everything, just sitting there quietly, believing the world is theirs. So you get fatter and fatter. My gosh, look at the obesity level. I mean, what do you think that comes from? From being completely and totally complacent and never having to do anything much. Ain't came the poor birds in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, they went through hell and they went into Golas, as I'm gonna show you. And therefore, they never quite recovered. And Minolan de Golo, where does it say that they went into Golos? Tanya Reb Yehuda Omer, 52 shana, lo avar ish b'Yehuda. There were 52 years where there were no people in Eretz Yehuda, because as it says, al ha'arim esa b'chi v'nehi, v'anaot midbar kina, ki nitzchu mibli ish over, v'lo sham'u kol mikneh, me'of ha'shamayim v'ad behema, nadu halachu. So this is, by the way, the Erev Tisha B'Av daf, which is completely inyonim of Tisha B'Av, including even quotes from the Haftorah, from the Parshas, from Shabbos Chazon. So it's particularly appropriate. In any event, so And since we couldn't read it on Tisha B'Av, so it came out on Erev Tisha B'Av. Perfect timing. Anyway, so because of that, now actually, as Rashi points out, this is clear from simply an analysis of the time. Once we know that they were halachut, nadadu halachut, going even on the birds, it had to have been 52 years, because that was the amount of time, and it works out in the Gemara Megillah, from the amount of time of the Golas of Tzidkiyo until they started building the Beis HaMikdash at the time of Koresh, and it took them 18 years after that, as the Gemara works out. So 18 plus 52 works out the 70 Shanos of the Golas of Bavel, and that was complete and total to the point where the earth was scorched or earth policy, and there were not even any birds. But there's a remez to it in the Pasuk that it's 52 years, and that is that Behema, Begematria, is 52. Omer Rabbi Yaakov, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. You should know that all of these species that were wiped out actually made their way back into Eretz Yisrael, except for Kulias HaHispanis. The Omer Rav, the reason that we don't find Kulias HaHispanis in Eretz Yisrael anymore is because the Omer Rav, Hani Medari de Bavel, Mahadri Maya La'en Itam, V'hai Kivan de Lo Shorer Shidre, Lo Motzi Misalek. And that explains why they're not there, which means that the water that we find, that even though it's going downhill, and there doesn't seem to be any possible way that that water would be able to get to Ein Itam, back to Eretz Yisrael, in any type of underground aquifer, what you're not aware of is the fact that some of these aquifers are actually under pressure. And because of that, they're like salmon runs. If you know how to go upstream, then you'll be able to make it even upstream. But these fish actually do not have that type of ability. Their musculature and their spine is not powerful. Because of that, they weren't able to make their way back. As far as the other questions are concerned, why are things so happy in Bavel during Yontif? That's because they're not included in the terrible Kalola of Hosea, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'yishbati kol misosa chaga, so because of that, there's a klola on the holidays in Eretz Yisrael until the Geula, so that you don't feel the full sense of Simchas Yontif. And that was not said on Chutz La'aretz. Uchtiv chodshechem u'moadechem san'a nafshi hayu alai l'torach. So that means all that I get, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, out of your holidays is just a lot of trouble. I'd rather not have it at all. I hate it. What's the trouble? Mayaya Laila Torah. The trouble is, Amar Reb Elazar, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you think it's not bad enough the way these guys act? But when they act that way, now I got to sit around figuring out how to take it out on them. You know, now that's not easy. I don't like that kind of thing. So it's not bad enough that they're sickening their holidays, but now I got to figure out what Gezeira Kashav Yalehim. Omer Reb Yitzchak, you know, the truth is, if you take a look over here where we live, I mean, there hasn't been a single holiday that I can remember that you didn't get some kind of government problem of an army coming into Tzipori, where I live. And Rabbi Hanina said, yeah, well, it's the same thing at Tveria. Every single holiday, there's always either the tax authorities or the cops or the CIA. Somebody's always coming around to make trouble. And it just always works out that it's on a holiday. You don't think that's crazy? Shobal Tveri Agmon Vekamton and Ubal Zamora. These are terrible people. Mipnei Mata Midei Chachamim Shebebavel Mitzuyanim. That's a different issue. It's not because they're not B'nai Torah. It's because they're not in their natural environment. They always feel like strangers. The Amri Inchi, you know, is a popular saying that says, B'mata shamai, b'lo mata tutbai. So in my own town, I can go based on people knowing me. I don't have to dress up. I don't have to do all kinds of shows. People accept me for what I am because I'm part of this place forever. But when I go somewhere else where nobody knows me, all I have is my clothes. And because of that, they have to dress up. And in fact, we see that Rabbi Yochanan is right because it says, Haba'im Yashresh Yaakov, Yatzitzu Farach Yisrael, Umal'u Pnei Tevel Tnuva. So then that means those who are coming to Bavel, or those who are coming to Mitzrayim, as we apply it when we read the Haftorah, but those who are coming outside into the Golos will fill up the earth with understanding, which means that B'nai Yisrael are going to be tzitzim uprachim. They're going to be scintillating with all of these beautiful new chidushim in Torah. And this refers to, as Rabbi Yosef says, Eilu tamidei chachamim shebebavel sheosim tzitzim uprachim letorah. Now, the next thing that you asked, and you attributed it to dietary issues, it's not dietary issues. Mipneima ovdei kochavim mizuhamim. The reason that their smell is shelo amdu al har Sinai. It's because of not being present on Har Sinai. What does that have to do with it? Because b'sha'a shebana chash al chava. Basically, what we understand is that in Gan Eden, with the way in which we became open to evil, was essentially a sexual experience. Because it says, anochash hishiani, as Rashi says, hishiani is a lotion of nisu'in. And the only way that such a thing could have happened is by penetration. So we're giving it this sexual metaphor. So it's like the nochash actually copulated with Chava to make her more reptilian, and therefore to give her that Yetzer Hara. So at that time, that very openness made her stink. And because you became much more part of the decayable earth rather than connected to the aspect of Adam and the unique Adam things. And so when Yisrael was Eimed al Har Sinai, so that cured everything. Paskazo matan. Because as Rashi points out, even people who were blind and lame and so on, everything was cured on Har Sinai. So that internal zuama was also taken away. But of Dei Kochavim, they never stood on Har Sinai. And because of that, lo paskazo matan. So then how do you explain Gerim? Gerim are exactly as pure as Bnei Yisrael, and they didn't stand on Har Sinai, so what happened to their Zohama? So Amarle doesn't matter, even though you could say physically they weren't there, but Mazalayo Havi, we know, it says in the Pasuk, Et asher yeshno po imano omed hayom lifnei Hashem lokeinu, vet asher einenu po imano hayom. And therefore, they have exactly the same impact of Har Sinai, and you won't be able to see the slightest difference. Now, this whole idea that you require Har Sinai to be Paske Zuhamatam is actually a machlokas, because it argues with the Rabbah Bar Kahana. The Omer of Rabbah Bar Kahana, Ad Shloshat Dorot Lo Paske Zuhamam Avotenu. You can see, if you take a look at the development of Klal Yisrael, that it took three generations of careful breeding to breed out that filthiness from Klal Yisrael. Because otherwise, how do you explain the fact that Avram Avinu had Yishmael? And boy, speaking about Zuama, you know where you can find that. And then how do you explain the fact that it took another generation and Yitzchak still had Esav? But Yaakov Avinu had Yud Bei Shvatim Shelo Haya Behem Shum Dofi. Now that's well before Har Sinai. And because of that, that the real reason is that those who came from Yaakov no longer had Zuama. So it's true that those that came afterwards were with Tuhar and Har Sinai, but you're saying it's only because of Har Sinai, Rabbi Yochanan. That isn't so.